at my watch, it was 9:21. We was at a rock and roll dance, having nothing but fun, and we rolled, reeling and rocking. We was reeling and rocking, rolling till the break of dawn.
Welcome to Nocturnal Journal, and on the phone with us is Cliff Frelick, the Executive Director of Cinema St. Louis. Thanks for joining us, Cliff.
Happy to be here, Dave.
How'd that sound? I did okay with the name there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Cliff, we're going to talk about the St. Louis International Film Festival. It starts when? It's 11 days. When does it start? When does it wrap up?
We go November 1 through 11, so it's 11 days. We sort of start small on a Thursday night with a single screening, and then we explode outward, and we're at as many as 12 venues simultaneously on our weekends.
I want to handicap the festival with you this year, but before we get into that, I'd like to talk about the roots of the festival. It started about 92. Talk about how it's grown over the years.
Well, way back when the fest first started, it was an all-volunteer organization, and it was tiny. The first festival had 25 films. This year we have, I think, more akin to 425 films. Many of those are shorts, mind you, but nonetheless, each one is important. So it was at a single venue, 25 films. They were really high-quality films, I got to say. I give props to the founders of the festival. I was not one of them. I was in the world of journalism back in those days.
Oh, were you?
I was covering the festival.
Were you? Where'd you work at?
I was the executive editor at the Riverfront Times, which is the local alt weekly in St. Louis.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was a film critic. That's how I started, and was a freelancer for the RFT for many, many years before I became an editor there, and then was a long-time editor there, different titles, but ended up as executive editor. So at any rate, I was covering the fest, so I was really pleased when the folks got together and decided to put on a film festival, which was obviously sorely lacking in St. Louis at the time. And it was right around the time when a lot of cities of like size were sort of launching fests of their own. Nowadays, every little town seems to have a film festival. But that's a relatively recent phenomenon. It's probably within the last, decade to a decade and a half that's really sort of exploded. Back 27 years ago when we started, it was still a relatively new thing. Obviously, there were fests of some substance and also had been around for a while, too. But nobody was, really sort of ancient. There weren't too many seniors on the block at that point. Nowadays, there are festivals that are more than 50 years old. But back in those days, they were, perhaps as the oldest would have been what we are right now.
What's the selection process like, and what do you look for? And then maybe I'll zero it into percentage of documentaries this year. I mean, we're going to be down there with our little documentary, but I just kind of want to tell the listeners how you pick films.
Sure. So as I say, the festival has grown considerably over those 27 years. And so nowadays, we have many different ways in which we sort of secure films. When the fest first started, they basically just looked at prominent films that were sort of working the circuit, who were, mostly studio related. Nowadays, we have a submission process, I have for many years, and we use two submission platforms. They're called Without a Box and Film Freeway, although Without a Box is going out of existence, actually, next year. So actually be shifting a little bit. But at any rate, we receive on the order of 2,500 submissions to the festival every year. Again, many of those are shorts, but we do receive probably on the order of between 200 and 250 documentary features and a similar number of narrative features. So that's sort of like the base of what we're looking at each year. But beyond that, we also go to other festivals. So we scout other festivals, both physically by going to them and watching movies on site, but also by looking at other festivals and their programs, seeing what looks intriguing, reading reviews from Variety, Hollywood Reporter, and other publications that do IndieWire that cover the festival circuit. And then we'll reach out to films that we've either seen or that we've heard great things about and ask for screeners so we can then potentially include them in the mix. And then the last bit is the studios, they typically, because of where we are in the calendar, we're in November. So that's the sort of lead up to the big awards period where they release a lot of the films that are going to end up getting nominations for Academy Awards and the various other awards that are given at the beginning of the year. And so we are in a prime spot to be able to sort of scoop up some really high-profile and high-quality films that the studios have on offer. And this year we have, I think somewhere on the order of as many as 16 films that are actually going to receive a eventual theatrical release and a fairly high-profile theatrical release. But that's not so we love those because that's oftentimes what people have heard about and come to see, and they help pay for everything else. So we very much want to have those movies. But the real essence of the festival is showing films that would otherwise not have the possibility of screening on in a theatrical context in St. Louis. So those are American independent films, documentaries, and especially international films, both features and shorts. So what we want to do is expose the local region to as many great films as possible that they would otherwise not likely have an opportunity to see. They may stumble across it on Netflix or, you know, for streaming, various other ways that you might encounter some of these movies. But what festivals do is they do the work for you. You don't have to sort through and try and figure out what's good and what's not. We do all that work for you, and you can be pretty certain that any good fest will have curated their selections, and you can be reasonably sure that you're going to be seeing something of quality.
Have you? We've had filmmakers on the show before, and we've documentary filmmakers a lot. And have you seen an increase in documentary submissions? I mean, we've talked about the thing. It's easier for people to get access to equipment and turn in, you know, do documentaries these days. Have documentaries grown for the festival?
Absolutely. Now, you know, part of that is just a conscious decision on our part. We like documentaries. I happen to be the co-programmer of documentaries features, so I am especially interested. I love narrative films, too, so it's not like I'm exclusively focused on docs. But that happens to be the part of the festival that I am primarily responsible for programming. So we've made a conscious decision to sort of make that a big part of the festival. And there's a logic to that, both because there's a lot of high quality, I keep saying that word, quality, material available on the nonfiction front. But there's also sort of now a sort of Missouri focus on documentary in the sense that in the middle of the state is another great film festival called the True False Documentary Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri. And they're one of the best doc festivals in not just in the United States, but in the world. And so Missouri has developed a very great reputation among filmmakers. And we've recognized that what True False is doing and how good those films are. And we've sort of slipstreamed behind them. We actually offer more documentaries than they do, even though they're a dedicated documentary festival, because we go over 11 days and they only do a weekend, 4 days. We're able to actually feature more. But nonetheless, there's we're sort of extending the True-False brand on some levels. Their interest in documentaries has also transferred to me. And so we've been doing a lot on that front. And then as you offer more documentaries as part of your programming, filmmakers recognize that, and then they start submitting. So we receive a really terrific selection of documentaries from the submission point of view. We don't have to struggle to find really great docs to feature at the festival. We're getting things, again, because of the time of year, that are sort of like the best of the documentaries that have premiered throughout the course of any year. You know, stuff we're playing, probably on the order of maybe as many as 10 films that premiered originally way back in January at Sundance, but, you know, Tribeca, Full Frame, AFI Docs. There's a whole range of really great general fests that specialize in docs, but also, you know, very specific docs festivals that we receive submissions now from. So we're very pleased to have developed that reputation, and because of that, yeah, we get a lot of documentaries submitted to us, far, far, far more than we would have just 10 years ago.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Before the break, then we'll get into some specific films. Can you give me the websites and how people can find out more about the festival?
Sure. It's cinemastlouis.org, cinemastlouis.org. I always wish we just did it cinemastl.org, but we made that decision too many years ago. So cinemastlouis.org, and then you'll find lots of buttons to push or click on with regard to navigating the festival website. You can search it in lots of different ways.
And 11 different venues, is that right?
As many as a dozen screens will be running simultaneously on the two weekends. We downsized slightly during the middle of the week, but believe me, there's still plenty to see even Monday through Thursday.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with Cliff Frelick, Executive Director of Cinema St. Louis, and we're going to handicap this year's festival. So don't go away on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. We're on the line from St. Louis with Cliff Frelick, Executive Director of Cinema St. Louis, and we're talking about the St. Louis International Film Festival. There we heard our friends, the Skeletons, doing St. Louis, and our little film, our little modest film, Center of Nowhere, is going to be screening November 4th. So thanks for having us as part of the festival, Cliff.
Well, we're really pleased to be able to do so. When I heard about the film from our mutual friend Dan Dirkholtz, right, a great music writer, Dan is a former employee of mine from the Riverfront Times, actually. But we were both huge fans of the Skeletons / Morels, depending on when you saw them. first encountered them actually when I was in grad school, when I was at Mizzou. They used to come through town there in Columbia, and I had my first exposure through a friend of mine who was a big fan, and then I saw them many times here in St. Louis, and they were always a huge amount of fun. Great show. So when I heard that Lou Whitney was going to be sort of the center of this film, obviously that's not just what the film's about, but he's sort of the sun in which everything sort of revolves around.
Exactly.
So I was really pleased to see it, and then I was even more pleased to find out that it was good.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, it's about, you've seen it, I won't go into a whole snap, but it is about how community influences art, you know, and I just think that's so important these days, and that, you know, that's why we have Cashew Chicken and Route 66 and all that stuff in there. And you imported Abby. You brought in Abby. She's going to do a little set before the screening, right, Abby Waterworth?
Actually, after.
After,
she's
okay.
Going to do a set after the screening, and then we actually have a little Springfield-based short.
Oh,
well,
I want to talk about that. Yeah,
restaurant.
Yeah, talk about that. I'm real interested in that. Yeah, talk about that.
It's called Lingua Francis, and it's actually about a chef who he did his sort of tutelage, his apprenticeship in Denmark, weirdly enough, but then came to Springfield. And he's, trying to establish a, really serious restaurant scene there in Springfield, Missouri. So we thought that given the fact that your film, in fact, explores more than just music, but rather sort of the roots of community, mm-hmm. and how music is a reflection of that. And you actually deal with food as part of the film, we thought it would be a really appropriate pairing. So it's sort of like the wine that's going to be going with the meal.
Very good. Very good. So to switch gears a little bit, and being from Chicago, and it's the same day, November 4th, and like we were saying off the air, you could see both films. Talk about Say Her Name, The Life and Death of Sandra Bland. That's in the afternoon, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's an HBO film, so people who are HBO subscribers are going to have an opportunity to see it eventually. But we're really pleased to be able to play the film. It obviously deals with the tragic case of Sandra Bland, her death in police custody, and the questionable nature of it, and then obviously all the subsequent activity that surrounded that. You know, here in St. Louis, obviously, we've had our own issues with Ferguson, and we very much have a stream of programming of in the festival that addresses issues related to the Black experience. It's called Race in America, the Black Experience. So when I heard about Say Her Name, I reached out to HBO to see whether or not it'd be possible for us to screen it here. And thankfully, everything worked out. We're bringing in both of the co-directors and Sandra's sister and the lead attorney on her case. So it'll be a very robust discussion, I suspect. And I'm sure it'll be a really terrific screening. So we're looking forward to that.
And what time is that on November 4th?
I believe that screens at 2 p.m., but I can check it just to be absolutely on the safe side. 2 p.m. on Sunday, November 4th. So let me be absolutely certain. I'm scrolling through my own website to make certain. There's a lot on here.
Yeah,
so,
right.
No, I take it all back. It's 4:30. It's a 4:30 screening. But that doesn't mean that you have to skip Center of Nowhere. You can still manage to make it, although you probably won't be able to stay for the discussion afterwards.
Okay. Two more, and then I want to get into some of the John Goodman stuff. Maybe a guilty pleasure. I'll be out of town by then, but this one's for the ladies about the black male strippers.
Yeah, that's actually a really fun film. I mean, it deals every now and again with more serious issues, but mostly it's a very fun movie about black male strippers and their extremely passionate fans. They definitely have this sort of coterie of followers who are very devoted to this crew of strippers. So we're going to have the filmmaker here in town, Gene Graham. He's coming in. I suspect that there might be a few special events sort of related to things that might take place during that screening. I can't say for certain, but I believe Gene is reaching out to some local black strippers, black male strippers. So we'll see. Maybe somebody will pop up.
My goodness.
Or
pop out. Who knows?
Let's hope that doesn't happen. We'll get ourselves in trouble.
I don't have it written down, but memory serves. Is that November 11th? I don't know why that's sticking in my head. Is it November 11th?
No, that's actually it's actually on Election Day.
Oh, it is.
It's a way of taking your mind off the election, which I think we could all use nowadays. It's on Tuesday, November 6th.
And what time? What time will that be?
That's at 8 p.m.
Okay. And then one more, and then we'll get into some of the opening night stuff. He's been on our show, and I am coming down early just to see him. And I know he's been working on this documentary a long time, so talk about Bathtubs Over Broadway. That's on November 2nd. Steve Young.
Yeah, it's a really fun film, premiered at Tribeca. It deals with what's sort of dubbed industrial musicals, you know, trade shows and the like. Back in the 60s, especially, they would actually have very elaborate Broadway-style presentations, actual shows, whole shows devoted to whatever product was, you know, being discussed, the issues at play. They would actually contract with Broadway stars and Broadway writers and composers to perform and also to write and, you know, put on the shows. And they were preserved on these sort of cast recordings that were only for internal distribution. But a writer for David Letterman's Late Show, Steve Young, happened to stumble across some of these, and he became absolutely fascinated by them. And the more he got into it, the more he discovered, including there were some, you know, visual records. Some people had made films of these shows, or actually had made films that were designed to be shown at these kinds of trade shows. So he just kept finding more and more of this material, and then began tracking down people who were associated with it. And, you know, they were, again, legit Broadway performers who were just earning some additional cash by actually performing in these. And some of them did, in fact, sort of specialize in them. So you get this really sort of warm, affectionate profile of all these people who had participated over the years in these shows, which are now, you know, long past. They don't do this kind of stuff anymore. And Steve found a remarkable number of them. So he'll be actually in attendance, and he is a bit of an amateur musician himself, so we've secured a guitar for him. He didn't want to bring his own instrument, but we've got a good quality guitar for him, and he's going to actually perform a few tunes himself, some of his favorites, in addition to doing a Q&A after the film.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be there for that. In my 30-plus trips to Springfield over the 6 years of doing Art Doc, I would always, on the drive from Chicago, I'd always stop at Euclid Records. And I want to say, you go upstairs at Euclid Records, you can find, once in a while, you can find some of the stuff that Steve's talking about. They've got some great bins upstairs where I'm sure you know where you can find some of this type of music. So that's a side trip.
Pretty amazing stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily, I wouldn't choose to put it on the turntable and listen to it myself, but it's just sort of pure entertainment. But put in the context of this film, it's absolutely delightful. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay, to wrap it up, talk about the honor to John Goodman. He's up against Steve Young. I think that's sold out, the Big Lebowski. But yeah.
That's correct, yeah. John Goodman, of course, is a native of St. Louis. He grew up in Afton and went to school here in Missouri as well. So we've wanted to bring him to the festival for any number of years, but as everyone who's familiar with Goodman knows, he's an immensely busy guy. He's constantly working, so it's been hard to find a time when he was able to come to the festival. This year, because he's working on The Conners, the television show, he has a sort of regular schedule, and he can't take other gigs because, obviously, he's committed to the show. And he just happened to have a window in which they were going to be off on our first weekend. So he said yes. I mean, I could have been blown over with a feather. I mean, knocked over with a feather, because it was a surprise after all these years of asking to finally get that yes. And it happened to coincide with the 20th anniversary of The Big Lebowski, one of my absolute favorite films, and I think one of his best performances. He's remarkably good in that film, as Walter Sobchak. So we were pleased to be able to, one, do it in conjunction with The Big Lebowski, and then have a conversation with John in which we give him a Lifetime Achievement Award, one of our absolutely most deserving Lifetime Achievement Award honorees.
Okay, the Whitaker St. Louis International Film Festival, November 1st to 11th. Various venues, more info, cinemastlouis.org?
That's correct. Yeah, okay. Visit the website. It'll give you way more information than you want.